are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, January 8th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, we're still here. That's good. And Iran shows restraint in its public retaliation, at least its public one, as of last night. Meanwhile, a Ukrainian airplane, a Boeing 737, not the same model, upon takeoff from Tehran last night, crashes, kills 176 people, not sure why. Meanwhile, back in this country, Mitch McConnell claims he has the votes to start a witnessless impeachment trial in the Senate. Nancy Pelosi shoots back, still holding on to impeachment articles. Meanwhile, Joe Biden, before taking a cup of milk and going to bed last night upon hearing of the Iranian missile attack, claimed that Mitch McConnell will be mildly cooperative once he becomes president.
Cutting Medicare and Social Security.
Right. Speaking of which, Trump is looking to cut Social Security disability benefits. Spain's parliament backs a left-wing coalition government, and a new study shows that tax incentives, like those offered to Amazon, spur no economic growth in the cities that do so. Credo Action shudders, while the Trump judicial architect, Leonard Leo, leads a new conservative slush fund. And HUD to roll back housing desegregation rule started during the Obama administration because, you know, racism's over. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. If you were listening to the program on Friday, and we actually have two more interviews that we'll put out today that we did on Friday that I think that we'll release on YouTube probably. When we were talking about Iran, and I can't remember which one did we play on the show on Friday. Who was it, Brendan, that we played on Friday?
Valley Nasser?
Valley Nasser. And what I think was it? I can't. Valley Nasser. Okay. And basically what we had discussed was it really comes down to what would be the nature of the retaliation by the Iranians to the assassination of Soleimani. And would it be sufficient for the Iranian government in terms of satisfying their constituency, which is the millions of people who were marching, or I should say were participating in the funeral procession for Soleimani, but also measured enough so that Donald Trump did not respond to it. And it appears, as of last night, that at least in terms of what the Iranians are going to do publicly, that is what happened. They fired a series of ballistic missiles into two different bases that were at least these bases are quite large, that were not manned. They basically fired them into areas that were empty. Now, it's not inconceivable that there was some coordination through back channels with the United States, frankly. It's not impossible. It's also just as likely that they have enough intelligence resources on the ground in Iraq to know where to put those. But this was all very deliberate. That doesn't mean that the Iranians won't be doing things like, I don't know, you know, putting some type of computer virus into our grid and shutting it down or something. I imagine that would be a little bit more extreme, but they it's
owning
not
owning us on Twitter.
Owning us on Twitter. But I think there will probably be some other violence that will be less attributable to the Iranians. I mean, these were missiles that were fired from Iran. This was specifically a piece of theater. I want to, obviously, we're going to talk more about this as we go, but we'd like to start the show with something a little bit lighter. Of course, there is nothing right now, but I have some thoughts on this, and we will get into it. Both in terms of like the ridiculous of all of this is, but we are in one of those classic situations where Donald Trump is now being lauded by some in the media for not killing us all. I saved your life. I didn't kill you. And, you know, this is I have some thoughts on it. I mean, like literally to the point where like I'm not quite there, Jamie. Don't get too excited, but almost having some anarchist thoughts. But not quite.
I'm listening.
Right. I know. I just said that to get you focused for the rest of the program. But I don't. I'm not quite there. So this happened on Fox News last night. In addition to Sean Hannity, of course, calling for complete destruction of Iran, but not so much that we need to put boots on the ground. You know, that kind of war. The one that exists in like Space Troopers or whatever the hell it is. Starship Troopers. Yeah, it's some type of fantasy world. So here is, this is not, it's not Laura Ingraham. It's what's her name? Shannon Bream has got Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Now, you know, he's Lieutenant Governor of Texas because he's wearing his Lieutenant Governor outfit, which is like, I mean, seriously, he does. He looks like some type of park ranger. Like he's like, I don't know. And then they apparently is it not? Oh, it is? It's not? Okay, wow, I was going to say, it looked like they took some guy, it looked like they took Brandon Straka and...
Uncle Straka.
And he passed away, and then they sort of embalmed him and put him next to it. But this guy's just some type of... former State Department, I don't know, guy who's just there just to, I don't know, look...
wear a blazer.
Yeah, wear a blazer. And... So here is Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. He's talking about Iran has now apparently tried to infiltrate their Texas state computer system. You know, you recall all the times that he was upset about how many times like Russia did it or anybody else. But this is, you know, this is what he's here for. And the amazing thing is, I mean, look, Donald Trump is nuts. He's nuts. This is what, you know, when you read about like, well, it would have been like to have been a subject of the, you know, in an era where, you know, there was a king with syphilis or something like that. I mean, we are living essentially in that era. And the problem is that our system is just not in any way. And I don't know that any system is designed for it. But all of this, all of it, every bit of it, completely unnecessary. And I mean, to the point where you start to think that the logic of it is there's just a completely different plane of existence in which this makes sense. But the Lieutenant Governor of Texas has a slightly different take on this.
So I want to talk about something really interesting that I heard today that was a shocking number to me, Lieutenant Governor. Your Governor Greg Abbott there talking about reports from state agencies of up to 10,000 potential cyber intrusions per minute. Is this something that regularly happens for you all, or is this something that
Pause it for 1 second. Now, what they're obviously talking about is some type of like defense, you know, like a denial of service.
DDoS
attack from a bunch of like, you know, repeat, like more or less bots. There's not like
10,000 different guys.
There's not 10,000 Iranian IT guys going like, go, 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 go. But of course, they've got to make, I mean, like, you know, this is one dude who, you know, is like, I'm on the Texas desk. And I just, I set it up this morning and then I go over and I head over to Georgia. You know, that's basically it. But
cyber intrusions per minute. Is this something that regularly happens for you all, or is this something that you think is in somehow related to what's going on overseas?
We were having our domestic terrorism task force quarterly meeting today. And in that meeting, Shannon, it was discussed that in the last 48 hours that we had seen a tremendous uptick. Now, I will keep classified what we normally get on a minute-per-minute basis from Iran, but we were now able to trace 10,000 scans trying to get into our state systems per minute in the last 48 hours. That's 600,000 per hour, over 16 million per day. And so we are being very watchful for our state, and we're alerting our business community, our oil companies, big corporations. And by the way, for anyone in Texas and anyone in America who wants to learn about what we call cyber hygiene, they can go to dir.texas.gov, dir.texas.gov, to learn some things they can do, because we want to alert everyone to
charge.
Be very prepared, because Iran, obviously, if they're hitting us with 10,000 scans a minute that we know are coming from their country, they may be also attacking us from through other proxies from other areas. Then they are serious about trying to get into government and, I believe, big corporations in this country.
Yeah, and we know they've done it before.
Shannon, can I say something?
Sure.
They've done it before. Can I just say something quickly about tonight? The president has proven once again that he is brilliant at being predictably unpredictable. Mm. He's like a master chess player. He always knows many moves ahead of where he is, but his opponents or his enemies never know what he's doing next. And I think tonight Iran is really off balance. My dad used to have a saying with his generation of they don't know to shower or wind their watch, but they used a different word for shower. I think tonight Iran doesn't know to shower or wind their watch, quite frankly.
I think they do know how to select targets across MENA and the entirety of South Asia.
Well, of course,
decades, you
the,
moron.
And let's be clear here. Like, you know, he is predictable insofar as at the end, you know, at one point he just like wipes all the pieces off the board and that's it, and says we're going to start again. I mean, this is just sheer insanity that. Yeah. We have just crossed. We've crossed into just sort of the Rubicon has been crossed, ladies and gentlemen.
Just to be really put a fine point on it, like Richard Nixon had this madman theory, which meant like we are going to commit genocide and war crimes in Laos, Vietnam, and Cambodia, and then we will leverage that to have an arms agreement with the Soviet Union to open China. Completely immoral, absolutely murderous war criminal, but. Very coherent strategy. I mean, if you read about like the painstaking process of like, how do they send messages to Mao? How do they lay all the groundwork for this stuff? Like, there is an analog to what they're claiming he's doing. And it is some of the most both utterly immoral, but also very strategic, you know, thinking we've ever seen.
But here's the thing. There is no... I want to get to that. Let me do the ads first, and then I want to get to it because I'm going to need a little time for this. But there is an analog, but there is no geopolitical strategy here.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're making a claim that is not based in anything. Richard Nixon didn't go, well, we're going to bomb Laos. Then I'm going to have a press conference. Then I'm going to insult Mao.
I don't think he gets that far, to be honest with you. I don't think Trump gets that far ahead even.
Can you imagine sincerely believing that Trump is some master chess player here?
This
guy is in charge of a big state.
Or the alternate is, having the complete lack of shamelessness that you'll say that. Like, I mean, it's one or the other, and they're both, you know, sort of terrifying prospects. Folks, it's 2020. It's time for us all to quit this business and start fresh. And the way I'm going to do that, or at least the way that I'm going to continue to fantasize about it, is I'm going to head over to Capterra. I've talked about Capterra in the past. It is the free online resource that millions of people use. They use it every month. Find the best software solutions for their businesses. Like I say, they have so many different just categories. They have over like 700 categories of businesses that if you were looking for a new career, that's where I would start. Now, of course, that's not what it's for. What it is for is people who are actually working in these industries or in these businesses. And you can search and compare software that is available for those businesses. And so it helps your business. Capterra helps your business thrive, makes the software buying process and really in discovery process super easy and super effective as possible. It gets you educated as to what the possible downfalls or the upsides of specific softwares are that are relevant for your business, because you have over a million reviews from real software users. You can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Like I say, 700 specific categories of software. You can filter by, you know, features or by pricing or whatever. Compare software side by side. Capterra has all the info and data you need in one place. You know, I'll just sit here and go started at jail management software. Well, we would get rid of that, right? But janitorial software, Java CMS software, jewelry store management software, job board software. If you want to start your own job board, job costing software.
I don't even know what that means.
Job evaluation software. May look into that a little bit. People freaking out around here about that one. Job shop software. I don't even know K-12 software. If you have a school, Kanban tools. I don't know what that means. I'm looking at that right now. Kanban. So there's like Kanban product management. I'm like, I don't even know what this stuff means, but there's people out there who are listening, and I'm looking at how many different software there are for Kanban. And I can't even count. 30, 40. I don't know what. Can someone look up what Kanban means? Like, that's how deep this stuff goes, folks.
It's Kanban is a scheduling system for lean manufacturing and just in time manufacturing.
Boom. There you go. Visit Capterra.com/majority right now for free today to find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Capterra.com/majority. Capterra, that's Capterra.com/majority. Capterra.com/majority. Capterra software selection simplified. Also, if you're like me, you have no time to do anything. But you do realize sometimes you look yourself in the mirror, say, I could use a little self-improvement. Well, Blinkist is for anybody who cares about learning but doesn't have a lot of time. Blinkist takes the key insights from over 3,000 nonfiction bestsellers in over 27 categories, condenses them down into 15-minute blinks. They're text and audio explainers to help you understand more about the core ideas of each book. You use Blinks to get to a topic quickly. You find new topics to grow from, figure out which books you want to spend more time with, listen on the go, listen on your commute, listen while you're at the gym, or even download to listen offline. Blinkist is fantastic. If we're talking about changing careers for me personally, the ones that I'm looking at now, they have a couple of bestsellers. I mean, I've talked in the past about, you know, my Tim Ferriss obsession and that 80-20 stuff and the 4-hour work week and that stuff. I've learned a lot from that, actually. But I'm frankly not going to spend a lot of time doing it. That's One of the things I learned with the 80-20 thing. I'm not going to spend 80% of my time learning 20% of my material. I'll do the opposite. I'll spend 20% of my time learning 80% of what I need to
do. Boom. Math.
And here, there's a couple that I'm eyeing, and I may just end up listening tomorrow on my walk to work. I could listen to two if I wanted to. One is, The Courage to Be Disliked by Ichiro Kishimi.
Would maybe another one could be prioritized.
I might want to prioritize. I may get back to how to win friends and influence people.
There you go.
Right now, I'm thinking also Everything is Effed, a book about hope is up there, or Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. They have history books. They have all sorts of nonfiction. They have some how-tos. And right now, Blinkist has a special offer for just our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/majority report. Start your 7-day free trial. And if you decide after 7 days, which I imagine you might, then probably will, you'll get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/majority report to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/majority report. Check it out, folks. Improve yourself and do so quickly. All right, let's get into this. First, I just want to start with just sort of the basis of this. I've had half a dozen people I know, friends, I guess you refer to them as, who have contacted me with the exact same question. They're mostly friends, but there are people who are like sort of more acquaintances because I get, in situations like this, I hear from a lot of people. What are you telling your kids? Because my daughter on Friday texted me during the show, are we going into World War III? And I thought, all right, this is my daughter. She's a little bit anxious. And apparently, like, all the kids are freaking out. All the kids. Some kids who are like 7, some kids who are 6, some kids who are 14. And I saw this thing. And so, you know, I immediately, I text it. I search it to see, like, you know, is there any psychiatrists or psychologists who are putting out stuff? And there's some, and it's sort of generic. But there was one in Time magazine, How to Talk to Your Kids About the Situation with Iran. And frankly, I didn't find it terribly helpful. And then I found it really despicable in some respects. And I don't know who wrote this. I don't have it at the top of my page now, so I don't care. Who cares? Why don't the U.S. and Iran get along? The U.S. and Iran have a difficult relationship. It's been this way for many years. Now, for anybody who knows a respectable amount of history, like, let's say, someone who is a journalist who's writing in a magazine about the topic of why don't the U.S. and Iran get along, you would know that really you would start this probably in the early 50s. When it's possible you go before then, but I think, like, in terms of the modern era, when the CIA basically orchestrated a coup to get rid of Mogadish, who was the Iranian president, prime minister, and was a little bit too socialistic-y for the United States. They were a little worried about his oil. And so they engaged in a coup, got rid of him, replaced him with the Shah, who turned out to be rather dictatorial and oppressive and a king. And then ultimately exiled this guy, Ayatollah Khomeini, in a way to sort of like tamp down, I guess, any type of religious, and not just fervor, but any type of like social structures that would compete with his dictatorial regime. And because the United States was so closely associated with the Shah, gave him support, material support, obviously put him into office, if you want to call it office. That takes us up to where Time magazine starts. In 1979, Iran took 52 American diplomats and citizens hostage. They were released after 44 days. So it's been this way for many years. In 1979, Iran, that's where it started. Just like, wow, that's weird of Iran. Why would they do that?
Not cool, guys.
Not cool. Just randomly do this?
Totally unprovoked.
Okay. So we've established we cannot tell our kids, look, listen, I'm going to try and be as sort of gentle about this as possible. Back in the old days, you know, put aside for a moment Venezuela, what's going on in Bolivia, and et cetera, et cetera. Back in the old days, we would interfere with other countries' governments. And what we did was wrong. And then it took, 25 years to metastasize. And they ended up, there was a revolution there. And because of the United States rule and its the symbolism, they held 50 some odd of our diplomats hostage. And after a year and a half, they released them. Now, we're not going to get into Solly. I'm not going to get into the role that Ronald Reagan played in keeping them in there, and some other powerful interest that actually kept them in there as a way of leveraging an election. We'll talk about that when you get a little older.
The fact that we sold chemical weapons to Saddam while he was gassing them.
Exactly. That comes a little later. That comes later. And then they just go from 1979 to 2018. Tensions increased again after President Trump said the U.S. would no longer participate in a 2015 deal with Iran. Well, at least they got that. Now, no longer participate is really not the right word, but okay. This international agreement, in other words, this international agreement set strict limits for 15 years on Iran's ability to create nuclear weapons. In return, the U.S. and countries in the European Union agreed to end trade restrictions. In other words, they decided to not starve the country. When Trump pulled out of the agreement, the U.S. put trade restrictions back in place. This has hurt Iran's economy. So, in other words, I understand that you're too young to understand that it's making people, sicker and hungrier and poorer, but I'm just going to use the word economy because you're six. That presentation of history by a writer at Time Magazine, whomever it is, and maybe it's some 22-year-old who has no idea of the history and they can't go further back than 1979 because that's ages ago. And they couldn't be bothered to Google because people are writing about it all the time anyways. That is why we have this sort of like complete credulity. Why we have a press that right now will go after Sanders and Warren and Corbyn and anybody who hesitates or says the word assassinate or doesn't say the word terrorist when we're talking about Soleimani. If Soleimani is a terrorist for killing, just by the nature of being a general, because he is a general in a military, and he has no doubt killed hundreds, if not, I would imagine as a general, like you're not doing your job if you're not killing thousands and you've been engaged in war. I don't know how many civilians he's killed. He's certainly probably been responsible, at least as a general is, for the killing of U.S. Military personnel. But there was a piece in the Times reminding people of what happened in 1988 when the Navy warship, the Vincennes, was chasing after an Iranian warship and went into Iranian coastal space. And apparently, the guy who was running that warship, I don't know what you call him. captain, I guess, a guy named Rogers, saw an airliner that was coming. Now, they say they accidentally shot it down, an Iranian airliner. It killed 290 civilians, 65 of whom were children. A subsequent study of this by the Navy found that none of the things that Rogers claimed were the case with this airliner happened. That it was outside of commercial airline lanes. It was in commercial airline lanes. It was the Vincennes that was disoriented. The idea that it was diving towards the Vincennes also found to be not true. The idea that it didn't have communications, also not true. They were so trigger happy, they shot this thing down and killed 300 Iranian civilians. Now, I want folks to, like, you know, contemplate what we did when non-state actors attacked our country and killed 3,000 civilians. We went into war for 18 years in two different countries. We killed hundreds of thousands of people. Hundreds of thousands of people. Soleimani, apparently, oversaw the Quds attempt to blow up the car of the wife of the Vincennes captain in Washington, D.C. She survived. This goes back and forth. If we're going to assassinate, if it's on the table that we can assassinate people who represent a potential challenge to the United States or a potential threat to our military personnel, the list is going to be endless. And if we can do that, then other countries can do that. And that endless list will include a lot of our top officials, too. This is why it's not done. This is why we don't go around and assassinate leaders anymore. At least not publicly. At least not in such a way that we're bragging about it. Because it's incredibly destabilizing. And to do so with absolutely no reason. And why do I say we have no reason? Because we have heard not a reason from our government, but like multiple ones that are inconsistent with each other. Let's start with reason number one that we did this, given to us by Mike Pompeo this Sunday. When I say this, I mean assassinate Soleimani. Look, Soleimani is a piece of crap, just like in the same way that every military person is a piece of crap.
Yeah, and I want to flip that just really quickly. You could either say that, that's completely fair and valid, or you could just say, like, and maybe we'll play it later, you know, what General McChrystal said, which we played last night. It's like, I think he's a patriot. I think he has his own, you know, patriotism, and he's fighting for his country.
Of course. Just like I am. McChrystal said that.
Well,
exactly.
Because he has the self-awareness to recognize that they're the same thing.
Yes.
And if we're going to have all this melodrama, we either need to decide that this is collectively wrong across the board or not have the melodrama.
Right. Is this McChrystal here?
The political. Wait, okay.
Here's McChrystal saying that
this
right
is
now.
Important.
I don't think we should view him as an evil person. I think we should view him just like I believe in my country. I think Qasem Soleimani believes in his country. Just as I would propagate, you know, the aims of mine, he would do his.
Yeah, all right, so there's the bottom line. Now, of course, McChrystal's going to say this because McChrystal doesn't want to be held to the same standard where he could be assassinated either, right? I mean, that's why. McChrystal wants to be able to go on to the board of whatever, Grantham Northup or Raytheon or whoever he is.
Teach at Yale.
Or whatever it is, wherever he's making all his cash from some military, the military industrial complex. He wants to be able to do that without having a fear that he can be assassinated. So, of course, he's going to go out there and say that. And fine, God bless him. But here's Mike Pompeo on Fox News Sunday, describing, like, we've got to make this into an imminent attack, right? Like, I'm trying to think what this reminds me of. Let's not let the smoking gun be a mushroom cloud. But here is Mike Pompeo spreading the oldest lie in the book.
President Trump says that General Soleimani was planning a, quote, imminent attack against Americans. You have said it was a, quote, big action that could potentially kill hundreds of American diplomats and soldiers. What was the plan? Who were the targets and how soon?
Yes, President Trump was right in what he said. So was I. We'll share all the intelligence that we can. I was the CIA director for a little while, Chris. There's things we simply cannot make public about what it is we knew at that time and what, in fact, we know today about the continuing activity. I think General Milley got it right when he said we would have been culpably negligent had we not gone after Soleimani when we had the opportunity. He was actively engaged in plotting against American interests. We need to look no further than what he had personally done over the days before that, where an American was killed on December 27th. There's no surprise. There's plenty of public evidence about the bad behavior of Qasem Soleimani. He was a designated terrorist, and we did the right thing.
Okay, so you see how it just even over the course of his answer, it evolved. First of all, it's a potential that could kill a lot of Americans. American diplomats. A potential. A potential. Well, there was potential last night when they lobbed those missiles. But they knew what they were doing. They didn't do it. Soleimani had responded to the killing of 25 Iranian militia people from the day before. They'd been going back and forth, tit for tat. So if Pompeo's the killing of one U.S. contractor, and I don't want anybody to die, but if that becomes the litmus test as to whether you can assassinate a military personnel, well, then whoever ordered the bombing that killed the 25 Iranians. Well, aren't they subject now to the same thing? But that is the argument on day one. Let's go to day four and listen to what Mike Esper, the secretary of Raytheon, excuse me, of the Department of Defense of Raytheon, has to say that it wasn't so much that there was an imminent attack. It was more like that it was, you know, well, here.
Jeff Shover.
Thank you. Can you clarify the attack Soleimani was planning? Was that days or weeks away?
I think it's more fair to say days for sure.
And is the U.S. legally obliged to withdraw from Iraq if told by the Iraqi government to go?
I'm not going to speculate. We're not there yet. There's been none of that has happened to the best of my knowledge. And as those events unfold, we'll address them and we'll have all the right legal experts.
Now, of course, saying days or weeks, here's something that I think hopefully you don't have to be an English major to understand, that I could live to the ripe old age of 110, and that will be still days away. We are now on day five of the attack that apparently was so imminent. So planned. Everything was there. Like, are we really to believe that the Iranian government doesn't have somebody who can step in and go like, oh, yeah, that attack that we was planned? Do it. We're 5 days away. If we're not, if we can't say weeks.
It meant that, I mean, or, you know, the attack on the credibility of the president to wage war on behalf of the Gulf states was at stake. Because he was going to Iraq, like, it's really important to look. If there's contradictory reporting that comes out, we'll follow it. But as far as we know, based off of senior Iraqi politicians and the fact that he was traveling on a commercial airliner, every indication is that this specific trip was a diplomatic initiative to back channel to Saudi Arabia.
That was supposedly started by Trump by what he said to the Iraqi prime minister. But here's Pompeo on that same day, having a different concept of what imminent means. For Mike Esper, imminent means days away, even though he was days away from when Soleimani was killed. When he said that, Pompeo has a slightly different take on imminent. Imminent has to do with what is actually already taking place. Here we go.
Finally, you know, there's been much made about this question of intelligence and imminence. I answered it multiple times on Sunday. I'm happy to walk through it again. Anytime a president makes a decision of this magnitude, there are multiple pieces of information that come before us. We presented that to him in all its broad detail. We gave him all the best information that came not only from the intelligence community, but for those of us who have teams in the field. We evaluated the relevant risks and the opportunity that we thought might present itself at some point. And we could see clearly that not only had Soleimani done all of the things that we have recounted, right, hundreds of thousands, a massacre in Syria, enormous destruction of countries like Lebanon and Iraq, where they've denied them sovereignty in the.
Pause it. I just want to just like note something that he is actually saying that one of the black marks against Soleimani is the destruction he wreaked in Iraq.
Also, like the Fox News article from a couple days ago of the chart being like, you know, Iran spends a lot of money on defense expenditure while their people suffer economic consequences.
Countries like Lebanon and Iraq, where they've denied them sovereignty, and the Iranians have really denied people in those two countries.
Pause it. And incidentally, also denying of sovereignty. You know, there's a lot of people who say that you are infringing upon our sovereignty for bombing us to assassinate somebody else.
In Syria, enormous destruction of countries like Lebanon and Iraq, where they've denied them sovereignty, and the Iranians have really denied people in those two countries what it is they want, right? Sovereignty, independence, and freedom. This is all Soleimani's handiwork. And then we'd watch as he was continuing the terror campaign in the region. We know what happened at the end of last year in December, ultimately leading to the death of an American. So if you're looking for imminence, you need to look no further than the days that led up to the strike that was taken against Soleimani. And then you, in addition to that, have what we could clearly see were continuing efforts on behalf of this terrorist to build out a network of campaign activities that were going to lead potentially to the death of many more Americans.
You know, they keep throwing that word potentially in there because, you know, really anything has the potential to kill Americans, right? Like, I did an ad for, a hot dog today. You could choke on it. Potentially has the ability to harm an American. They keep saying the word potential in there, which you wouldn't need to say that unless you were trying to provide yourself some measure of wiggle room in case you ever, like anybody ever blew the whistle on this. You wouldn't need to say potential because potential is embedded in the fact of anything that has never that has not happened yet. It has the potential for anything to happen. And so the idea that we can look at the word imminence, which is the state or fact of being about to happen, that evidence of something about to happen is stuff that happens prior to stuff about to happen, is absurd. It's absurd. This is just jibber-jabbish. Does anybody think that if there was any substantial threat to U.S. interests, that these guys would be like hesitant to put it out there? I mean, give me a break. This is a joke. Donald Trump, for whatever reason, these lunatics thought this would be a good idea. And here's the point. There's no operational value to this. There's no one who's out there making the case that in any way this is going to save lives. Like, there's no one out there saying that, you know, now that Soleimani is no longer general, there's no more generals in the Iranian army. Now that Soleimani is not the general, there's no more coordination of militias, franchisees. No one's even bothering to make that case. No one's even bothering to make the dumb argument that Americans are safer today. Well, it's absurd. It's absurd. It's an absurd argument to make. No one's even bothering trying to do it. They're just saying like this. We brought this guy to justice. This guy who we hadn't even mentioned, for years that the vast majority of Americans had no idea about. This guy who was a military general. And, you know, everybody knows that this is a function of deteriorating relationship with Iran that has been completely, completely orchestrated and completely unnecessary. And even the fact that Iran could exercise some measure of discretion. Now, obviously, they don't want to get into a war with us, because while it will be a horror show for us, it will be a greater horror show for them. That's just the reality of it. And, you know, the idea that, like, you know, there are people in the administration go like, we finally got rid of Soleimani. It doesn't matter. It's not going to change the trajectory of history one iota. The idea that both countries, and I don't even mean the countries, I mean like the people, the idea that there are people in this country whose kids are texting them from school or coming home from school at 6 years old and say, we're going to have World War III. The idea that the amount of just sort of like anxiety that the people of this country, the people of Iran, the people of Iraq, who have suffered just relentlessly.
They're the ones who died last night, incidentally.
No, as far as I know, no one died.
I think Iraqi civilians have died.
According to the reports today, no one died. But the general notion that people need to live under this amount of anxiety, and frankly, it benefits both governments, right? I mean, it benefits the supreme leader, because now everybody's rallying around what was, you know, sort of reform movements and protests that were taking place in Iran are now, of course, you know, quashed and co-opted and subsumed because of a nationalism and a patriotism that happens when you get attacked.
Yeah, okay.
And it helped Donald Trump, because Donald Trump is facing impeachment and he thinks that it somehow makes him more masculine, or it achieves, you know, whatever sort of slight of Obama he wanted to, or whatnot. It is all done at the expense of people. And this was my point about, you know, sort of like, you know, feeling somewhat anarchist sympathetic today. When you see the people in power who get value out of just putting us through this crap, both sets of leadership see value in putting us through this crap, this worthless, insane, never mind the, I mean, you want to talk about potential for killing American servicemen. Every action that Donald Trump and that Mike Pompeo put us through has the potential to kill American personnel and Iraqi personnel and Iranian personnel and people. It all has the potential for that. Potential for mass killings. So if that is the measure, then that guy should be subject to a legitimate assassination. And so this is all just, it's shocking. And as much as all of this is grotesque, the ability of these frickin' lunatics to get away with this stuff, because the people who don't directly benefit from it sort of nod their heads okay. What has happened in the past like 24 hours or 48 hours or 5-6 days? Whether it's like, you know, I saw some statement from Jack Reed, Democrat from Rhode Island, saying something to the effect of like, if they've struck us, we're going to have to strike back.
It's going
like,
to be hard not to.
I want to show you, last night I was on Chris Hayes' program, and I thought I was going to get bumped, because usually in these situations,
Can I interject something really quickly, because I think it's potentially relevant to what you're about to say, which is that there's some type of inevitability to this, even as of this morning, Trump has actually, in fact, de-escalated, although new economic sanctions are going to be horrible. But you know, Pepe Escobar, who's a writer for Asia Times, has a lot of sources in this area and, you know, could be wrong, but he's a credible reporter. He's reporting that basically that people from Trump administration approached the Qatari royal family. That's like an Iranian back channel. And essentially were like, one of two options they offered Iran was, can you do something like this? Can you do a proportional response?
Yes. Right.
And then we will stand down. The Iranian foreign minister, Zarif, who's the English-speaking, you know, public face, literally used the phrase proportional response to describe what they did. And then Trump did exactly what he did this morning, which for all the bluster is a de-escalation. And that's just important to note because even people like Jack Reed were saying it was an inevitability. Yes, no, this is important.
Well, I understand. That's the point I'm trying to make. I've prepped some stuff here. So the idea that we are that there is some type of notion of inevitability, that this is all set in stone, right? So last night I go to Hayes and I'm waiting to go on, and this guy who we last heard of when he was out there, you know, making millions of dollars off of Howard Schultz. In his barista essentially, coming on MSNBC to tell us that this is set in stone. You know, this is its point. We don't know if there's any casualties. The missiles have been launched onto U.S. military bases in Iraq, a country that we illegally invaded and occupied for over a decade. The missiles are launched. He doesn't know if there's anybody been killed, but let's assume that there have been 10 U.S. casualties, 5 U.S. casualties, 5 Iraqi casualties. Let's just assume, for the sake of argument, the idea that this is all about physics. There's no decision-making involved in this. Think about the implications throughout this entire thing. Is this guy saying this?
Then devastating consequences. Joining me now, Steve Schmidt, Republican strategist and MSNBC contributor. And I just feel like we did not need to be at this point.
The genie is certainly out of the bottle now.
Pause
watching
it.
This when
the genie is out of the bottle. It's impossible to put the genie back into the bottle. It does not stop. The genie is out of the bottle. This is just physics now. Somebody took a bowling ball, rolled it down a hill.
Strategist and MSNBC contributor, and I just feel like we did not need to be at this point.
The genie is certainly out of the bottle now. Watching this, when you think about history and you think about momentous events, and we look back, for example, a year in Vietnam, did that occur in 65 or 66? And the memory doesn't quite get there, but history unfolds in real time going forward, action by action, event by event, day by day. And we're at the early stages of a hot war. It is
Do you understand this guy's vision of how things work? That history unfolds. It's completely in the passive voice. No one's making a decision here. This is inevitable. Time marches on. This is not time. At every single step of this way, someone is making a decision. And these are not decisions that are simply made like in a panic. These are calculated decisions to bring results. And as far as this guy would have it, it is completely out of our hands. It's out of our hands as citizens. It's out of our hands as, you know, people who have access to millions of people that they're talking to. It's out of our hands as a general, or out of our hands as the Secretary of Defense or the president. It's out of our hands. And this is the way, remember, these are the guys who came out of the whole thing of like, you're in part of the reality-based community. We create our own reality. We put facts on the ground that cause other things to happen. Because we know that we can steamroll the will of other human beings. So much so that we can pretend that we're not even doing that. That it's physics that is doing that. That is history doing it. That it's time doing it. There's no decisions that are going on in this guy's mind.
going forward, action by action, event by event, day by day. And we're at the early stages of a hot war. It is a monumental moment that the Iranian military has launched a ballistic missile attack against U.S. military personnel on Iraqi bases in Iraq. It is almost certain that there will be a response from the United States. I think the analysis that from the Iranian perspective, the symbolism of the attack, the importance of this attack for Iran's domestic political situation is the same here. Donald Trump simply politically is not in a position to not be able to escalate from here.
Pause it. Here's the amazing thing about it. In addition to his whole assessment of how history unfolds, the idea that there's no agency amongst human beings, he's also completely wrong. I mean, he just like, even on his own terms, he's wrong. But that's not the point. The point that this guy had no idea what he was talking about and was willing to talk about it in this way is not the point. The point is that the vision, the analytical framework, and it's not just him. These are all across your TV and all across the, you know, the press and all across the foreign policy establishment. This is the way it works. Can't in any way stop this.
There is no alternative.
There is no alternative. It's just you drop a bowling ball from the top of a hill, it rolls down, and that's it.
That's now, how they manufacture consent for this stuff.
To be fair, Hayes pushed back on this. Let's just let it roll out a little bit because I think he was a little bit taken aback from this. And then we'll go.
Donald Trump simply politically is not in a position to not be able to escalate from here. So we're at a...
First of all, that's also... Stop it again. That's also stupid. Because Donald Trump, from a political standpoint, realizes that if he goes into a war, he's effed. He's effed. There are other people in the White House who want a war. But if Donald Trump gets us into a war with Iran, based upon what everybody who is sentient it knows, that either started the day he said, okay, assassinate Soleimani, or the day he said, let's pull out of this deal with Iran. If anybody thinks that it was going to go down and the inciting factor was that Iran landed some missiles on two bases in a country that we shouldn't have been in the first place, and a dozen military personnel died, are you serious? That's going to be the moniker? No, that's not what people are going to remember.
To not be able to escalate from here. So we're at a very dangerous moment now.
Although I don't want to take away the agency here because, mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that I think we've learned over 19 years, the longest period of war in the Republic's history,
absolutely.
19 years, we still, Mark Esper today talked about finishing wars where we don't want to start when we're finishing one. We're still in Afghanistan right now, of course.
Yes.
I had a flashback as I watched these news reports to coming home from a basketball game in sixth grade and to watch missiles over Iraq in 1991, when I was 12
absolutely.
Years old. So 30
right,
years.
Exact same thought for me.
30 years of missiles into that country. 30 years of that each individual discrete action, at some point, someone has to stop and make a decision to not. And the attack on Soleimani was retribution for the embassy storming. That was retribution for the airstrike that killed 25 Shia militia members, which was retribution for a rocket attack that killed one American contractor, that there has to be a decision by the U.S. as a democratic society, not just the president, not just the person watching cable news and thinking about whether we are going to enter into a hot war with Iran.
We've entered into a hot war with Iran. American personnel are under attack by Iranian ballistic missiles right now. As we speak, this has been wrought by the judgment of a president who was very clear over the course of the campaign that he knows more than all of the generals, We have seen the diplomatic corps of the United States utterly gutted over the last 3 years. We have policy made by tweet, by watching Fox and Friends. There is no indication except
that. Pause it. I would also add that if he wants to talk about this is a decision that's wrought, it's also wrought by commentary just like this. By the people who are ostensibly opposed to this. The idea that there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. It's done. It's baked into the cake. It exists. It's absurd. It's incredibly dangerous. And I will say this, like, you know, the I did come on. Let's play. I want to just play this one clip because right before I came on, I saw Joe Biden tweet out. And to be fair, I mean, nobody came out with a contemporaneous. None of the Democratic presidential candidates came out with anything. In fact, Nancy Pelosi came out with something that was at least fairly decent. But Joe Biden, who is, you know, running on his calm and steady, like I can respond to a crisis, tweets out, me and my wife are going to bed. Well, we'll talk about this in the morning. I don't think he said, well, I'm going to bed. He said, I'm going to hold off on commenting on the news tonight until we know more. But there is one thing I will say. See, like, look, you don't comment on the news. That's not what your job is. Your job's not even to comment on the facts. There's only two scenarios here that Joe Biden is facing at 8:37 p.m. last night. That is, the missiles have killed, let's just say, 24 U.S. military personnel. Or they've killed nobody. There's two scenarios. What should we do? Well, I'm going to take a nap. Jill and I are going to think about the troops. We're going to take some warm milk. And we're going to go to bed.
It was very much past his bedtime.
Well, yes. But this is the type of cowardice that is stunning to me. Like the in 2002, we're months out from a major attack on this country that had everybody on pins and needles. If somebody had walked into Macy's with a stick of dynamite and blown themselves up, half of New York would have emptied out in the months after 9/11. Half of New York. If you go upstate, you go out to Long Island, they would call new people 9/11ers. People had moved out of the city. And the Democratic politicians were like deer in the headlights. And everybody else was too. But now we're 20 years out from that. And the Democratic politicians, for the most part, are like deers in the headlights. But the American public is not there. I mean, it's stunning to me. Here, just play this. This is the only thing I had to say for the most part on MSNBC last night.
It's just crazy to me to view what's happening right now as this thing that's just happening out there in the world. Like we live in a democratic society precisely so that we can exert some control. And that's part of constitutional design. I mean, by design, the founders is constitutional design that there is some democratic control.
Right. I mean, the idea that regardless of what we have in terms of casualties, that we must respond is absurd. We have agency. People are going to call for de-escalation. They're either going to call for it now, tonight, or they're going to do it 18 years from now. After what we've been in Iraq. And so the bottom line is every single Democratic presidential candidate should tonight come out and say no war with Iran. Every single member of the Democratic caucus in the House and the Senate should be backing the bills by Tim Kaine and by Sanders and Khanna in the House and stopping funding and stopping the legal auspices for this war.
In some ways, it's still.
And there it is. I mean, it's terrifying that they did not. It's terrifying that they did not, that they're just going to let the president decide, I'm going to continue to provoke a war until enough of the commentariat say it's inevitable. That's a that's just effed up.
I mean, how did you not jump over the table and strangle that Schmidt guy? He's such a slime ball.
I was outside of the studio pacing and texting people just to sort of make sure that my people associated with the show to make sure that they understood my feelings.
We kept trying to explain to Sam that we didn't control the booking. It was really weird. Like, Sam, calm down. We hope you get on.
No, it was
also I will just say
not this show. Yeah. I was texting people associated with the show that was in process.
Where
I have a
Steve Schmidt worked really hard on that final project.
I don't do a very good job of not communicating my dissatisfaction in those moments, particularly with you know, the barista. As soon as he came out, I just he saw the back in my head. And look, here's the bottom line. This is why the Never Trumpers. Now look, MSNBC made a pivot 3 or 4 years ago where they started to hire Republicans. They hired Megyn Kelly. They hired Hugh Hewitt. They hired Greta Van Susteren. I don't know if people, for some reason, like people, this is like gone down the memory hole. This is all public. There are plenty of news reports and of on what the intention was. And there are still, and they got rid of a lot of their contributors who were anything but former Republicans. This is before Russiagate or whatever you want to call it. This happened prior to that. And then it was just a natural progression to hiring contributors who were, you know, former prosecutors and whatnot in anticipating, you know, these investigations of the president, which were obvious, right? Like, you know, when the president fires the FBI head and says, like, I got rid of him because he was investigating me. Yeah, there's a good reason to believe that a media outlet that you're going to want to probably bring in some prosecutors. I wouldn't necessarily have brought in the national security people, whatnot. I don't know if I would even bring in those prosecutors. That's not the point. The point is the embracing, just because they show up on MSNBC, of Never Trumpers, Republicans who were just in the wrong, you know, these are, it's like one industry and just multiple businesses within an industry. Pepsi, Coke. Coke got the contract. They're in the cafeteria. I work for Pepsi. I'm pissed. That doesn't mean if you're someone who doesn't want sugar in your drinks that you should embrace Pepsi because they don't like Coke. So the David Frums, the barista like this guy, here's Jennifer Rubin. And I think she's probably the best of them, frankly. She's probably the best of them. And still, you get her tweeting out last night. It could be worse. Bolton could still be at the National Security Council. But back in December of 2016, she was calling for someone, if not Bolton himself, someone very much like him, to be the ideal number two at State Department.
Yikes.
Back in 2011, she was saying, get John Bolton to run for president.
Double yikes.
Scroll down. Back in 2014, John Bolton's successor, reflection and accelerator of a more hawkish GOP and hopefully a smarter one. Everybody knew who John Bolton was in 2016, in 2014, in 2011. He was so much of a lunatic that when George W. Bush nominated him to be the ambassador to the UN back in 2004, maybe I think it was 2004, maybe it was 2005, that a Republican Senate, a Republican-controlled Senate, would not approve his nomination. He had to be installed with a with a, you know, a temporary, what is it, with the, you know, a recess appointment. So everybody knew. Everybody knew who John Bolton was. Now, I don't know if Jennifer Rubin just somehow saw the light sometime between 2017 and 2019 about John Bolton, or if it just became, and it's possible. It's possible she did. But I'm sorry. Like, you know, at what point? I remember the day that John Bolton's name came up. I was at MSNBC that day. And they had somebody on to say, like, you know, he's normal Republican establishment State Department. They did. And I got on my phone again and got in there and said, no, he's a lunatic. The bottom line is, you promote David Frum because he says Donald Trump is an a-hole. And then all of a sudden we're looking at attacking Iran. And now you have built this guy up as some type of voice of reason. And it's inevitable. We have to strike back. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. And fortunately, the Iranians are smart enough and measured enough in their response to avoid a war. And of course, you know, I think Donald Trump is frankly smart enough to know that he doesn't want a war because it's not going to help him. But the idea of putting us all through this type of anxiety, it's just a way that they maintain power.
I just want to add two really quick things. I would look up, it's worth reading George Voinovich in May 12, 2005, the full transcript of why he voted against Bolton. He was the Republican who sunk him on the committee. That's worth reading. But the other
from
thing.
Ohio, right, Voinovich?
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is, you know, this also, though, shows how stupid they are in terms of their calculations. Because I think the other thing that was going on here was that they've been waging a full economic war against Iran. They have no understanding, and there's tons of dissatisfaction inside Iran. That does not mean that anybody wants some type of outside orchestrated coup or invasion. And I think they legitimately confuse, like, labor uprisings for, hey, we can assassinate this guy, destabilize them. They're already pissed about the economy. And maybe this is, you know, I think this is a somewhat of a version of they will welcome us with a flowers moment in terms of their calculation.
Oh, absolutely.
But it got, you know, obviously completely reversed because they have no understanding what the dynamics of this place are.
I mean, what Soleimani meant to people, Felix from Chapo did a little episode about this, and he quoted an Iranian-American journalist that he was friends with, who said his dad is a communist and an atheist, and he loved Soleimani because what he represented to him was somebody out there fighting U.S. imperialism and owning them in Iraq. So the galvanizing effect and the suppression of dissent that was going on against the state there cannot be understated.
Yep. All right, we got to take a break, head into the fun half. Folks, you can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. It is your support that helps us continue to do this show. Also, the AM Quickie, it's available at amquickie.com. You can get both of those on the app, majorityapp.com. And justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Last night was Tuesday. Michael, what happened?
Well, we did our best to respond to what was happening with Iran in real time, and luckily we had a lot of resources to do it. So first we talked with Drew Mikhael from Belfast University about how also these dynamics can undermine the emerging social movements, particularly in Lebanon, that are trying to transition out of these sectarian divisions and deal with the underlying issues in the region. Matt Crisman was great. We just had a really wide-ranging conversation. I can't summarize all of it. And I spent a lot of time really looking at the differences between Shia and Sunni politics that emerged in the 80s. So a lot of ground covered. You can watch it all on Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. We're under 1,000 subs away from our first 100,000 subs. So go hit the subscribe button, patreon.com/TMBS on Patreon to get everything. And please go see us February 7th at the Bell House. Grab your tickets. Link on the homepage.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, we just released part 3 of our epic 3-part recap of the decade that was. So we close it out with 2015 till now. Our guest Jake Flores gives a grand unified theory of the black and blue dress, or was it white and gold? Speaking of things that change colors, Rachel Dolezal, remember her? We had Trump's epic pwnage of Hillary and all of us, if you recall, in 2016, the rise of the hashtag resistance. We got a little bit sincere at the end. It was great. Check it out. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
On Literary Hangover, patrons will be able to listen to a half hour of me reading The Sotweed Factor, a satirical poem by Ebenezer Cook from 1708. And that's going to be the episode for everybody on Saturday. Me and Alex will be talking about it. So if you want to check that out early, get the text of me reading it, because nobody's read it before. But now it's read. So
nobody's read it?
Nobody's read it for public domain or even for sale audiobook. So I'm the first voice. My voice is immortalized in this poem.
That's
now.
Sort of amazing.
I know. Yep. So I'm going to be the voice of colonial poetry.
Oh, mazel tov.
We'll see about that. Now we may see some competition. Now people racing into that market.
Oh, I'd welcome it.
Competition will start kicking in.
Yeah, so patreon.com/literary hangover.
See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back. Back. Back, back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Dannerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dannerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break for people.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
What? What? What? What?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? Hell of a lot of bank. Hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
See Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy. Total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy, total, pussy.
Hey, folks, before we get out of here, just want to remind you, Capterra is the free online resource that millions use monthly to find the best software solution for their business. They have more than 700 categories. You can search all of them with all the info and data you need in one place. And guess what? It's free. Totally free. Visit Capterra.com/majority for free today. Find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. And like I say, 700 different businesses, businesses you never even heard of. There's apparently a lot of software for it. Capterra.com/majority. Capterra, that's Capterra.com/majority. Capterra, software selection simplified.